Welcome to the Retirement Risk Show, the best retirement interviews and advice with Dave Hall. Learn strategies to help you reduce and even eliminate the risks facing your retirement.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Dave Hall. Very excited to be back with you talking about the longest self-imposed period of unemployment most of you'll have in your lifetime. Could be 10 years, could be 20. Heck, it might even be 30 or 40. It is what we call retirement. If you are looking to get safely through those golden years, please go to my website, retirementriskadvisors.com. Here you get access to all of our planning tools, our educational resources, even get access to my calendar where we can talk about what we can do to help you deal with the various risks you're going to face during your retirement years. One of the big things that we often talk about is longevity. It's one of the top 10 risks that we cover and really the biggest issue that's causing problems with most people's retirement. They're struggling to figure out how long they're going to live. And if they can't figure that out, obviously struggling to figure out how do we have the right assets we need to get ourselves safely through. Now, please know I've never had anyone come back from the other side, including my parents who both died young, and complain that they died too early and they should have planned their retirement different. But I do have people come to me all the time that have lived much longer than they expected. They've now ran out of money and they're trying to figure out how they solve their issues. So today we brought an expert in to help us deal with longevity, some research that she's done to help us better figure it out, maybe to where we can do a better job of planning. I've got with me today Dr. Jennifer Boylan. She's a biological psychologist and an assistant professor at the University of Colorado, Denver. She spent her career looking at longevity and the issues surrounding it, especially from the mental health side. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Dave. I'm really excited to share some of the things we've been learning with you and with your audience.
I'm excited to hear them because we often talk about longevity, obviously, because it's such a big part of people's retirement. And we often talk about the financial impacts and we talk about the fact that people are living longer generally than they expect they are, they will. But we never really talk about, hey, how do we get to a longer life? If we want to stay here and enjoy our grandkids and travel and do all those things, what are some things that we can do to allow us to have better years or longer years? And I know that's something that you've spent your life on. So if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about what got you into this space, and then we'll talk about some of the research you've done.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share this. One of our goals is not just living longer, but we want to live longer well, right? We want to live longer and healthier and fulfilling lives. And of course, there's a lot of factors that affect how long we live. Things, you know, including like where we're born, where we live, where we work, where we play, all of those can affect our opportunities to be healthy, how we feel as we get older, and also how long we live. The behaviors we do are important. Most of my work, so I'm a biological psychologist, I play in the space of thinking about how our psychological factors, how we feel about the way our life is going, and how do these affect our ability to stay in good health for as long as possible. One of the main things I study is something called psychological well-being. So here I want to provide a definition by what I mean when I say psychological well-being, because it's not just one thing. And I think well-being is a term that a lot of us understand, but I want to be clear on what I mean here. So when I'm talking about psychological well-being in my research, I'm measuring a lot of different things. I'm measuring whether we feel happy, whether we're satisfied with our life, if we have warm social relationships, how hopeful we are about the future, and whether we have a sense of purpose and meaning in our life. So psychological well-being is not just things like feeling good, enjoying our life. Those are certainly part of it, but it's also bigger. It's kind of striving to meet your goals, knowing what your personal talents and capacities are, and whether or not your life is in accordance with those things that are important. And, you know, a lot of the work that we've done shows that these aspects of psychological well-being affect our physical health, our risk for chronic diseases like heart disease and diabetes, and also how long we live.
I'm glad you mentioned that it's not just studying happiness. I'm not against anyone being happy, but one of the questions we often ask in our webinar, we don't do it anymore because we learned from it, was, are you happy with your retirement? Well, shockingly, most people said, yeah, I'm absolutely happy with what I've done for my retirement. And then when we switched it around and said, are you afraid you're going to run out of money in retirement? The majority of them said, yes. I'm like, how can you be happy with your retirement if you're going to die broke? That makes no sense to me. And obviously, you guys have figured that out through your study. What are some of the things that you're finding through the research you've done?
Yeah. So I mean, we know from my research, but also from decades of research from other researchers, that having high psychological well-being is good for mental health and it's also good for physical health. So in fact, one way we could define good mental health as we get older is whether someone has the presence of well-being. So it's not just the absence of distress or the absence of despair, but really the presence of the good stuff is one way you could say someone has good mental health. We know that individuals who have higher well-being are more likely to engage in healthy behaviors throughout midlife and old age. So things like whether you go get a cancer screening, whether or not you smoke, quality of sleep, whether or not and how much physical activity you get. We know that individuals with high well-being experience fewer stressors, and they're also better able to cope with stressors when they come up. Folks with higher well-being do a better job at regulating their emotions, their biological stress responses, and all of these things affect when we get diseases, how we're able to cope with chronic illness, and ultimately how long we're living.
Jen, this all sounds great and wonderful, but how do we figure out how to improve that in our lives? I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, if we have this, you're going to live long. It's like, hey, you know, I've got the gene to where all my ancestors lived to 100. I think I'm probably got a pretty good chance. But how do we get ourselves to that point where we can improve that to increase our longevity?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a really important question. If we had a happiness pill or, you know, something, we could fix a lot of ills. But there is good research to show there are some things we can do as individuals to increase our psychological well-being. So things like connecting with other people and nurturing high quality social relationships. Those are really, really important to our well-being and our physical health all across the life course. Things like being clear about what your goals are in life. And that might be something, you know, you think about with financial health. What do you want to do in retirement? What are your goals? What are your core values? What is important to you? Other things like volunteering and engaging with the community. So again, being involved socially is really important. So seeking out those experiences, paying attention to them, and savoring those, over time, those are really effective ways to increase your well-being.
I know for myself that it's something I took for granted. Prior to COVID, I went out quite a bit. I'd speak. I would go see clients. Then COVID hits and I work out of my home. I do a ton of webinars. Most of the work that I do with clients is on screen. I didn't really realize how much it was changing my life until just recently ended up being at an event. And I go to them still regularly, but as an event, I just thought, man, it is just so nice to be in this environment, to have the connection and the conversations and just even my own well-being of saying, okay, I'm finally back in a place that I spent 30 years of my career in that I'd gotten myself out of. And I've got to assume with the pandemic that I'm not the only one that's gone through some of that.
Yeah. I mean, the pandemic has exposed a lot about our need for connecting with other people. And in some ways, the pandemic has made us more creative, right? We can now connect with people through remote tools. I think a lot of us are getting better at that. But we knew before, but the pandemic has really highlighted, is that we need to interact with other people, both for kind of our social and community goals, but also for our individual well-being. We don't do well when we're on our own for too long. We need each other, and helping each other is important for a lot of aspects, right, of societal good and for individual good.
And do we find some of that can come through a spouse or partner? Or really, we've got to have more than that in the sense of, yeah, maybe they're important, but we also got to look at the outside influences.
Yeah, those are really good questions. So I think that, I mean, obviously spouses and partners are really important inputs into how we feel on a daily basis. In part, we share time and behavior and space, and all of those things can impact our well-being. I think what's less important than who it is that relationship really high quality? Is it trusting? Is it warm? Do you have people that you think will have your back if you need them? So it might be a spouse or partner. And for a lot of older adults, it absolutely is a spouse or partner, but if you do not have a spouse or partner, it doesn't mean that you can't capitalize through other high quality social relationships.
And I've got to assume it's different for everyone when we look across the board. I know for myself, I mentioned I've got 2 disabled children now to add to the other 6 that I had. I feel I'm a decent parent. It's something that I've done for most of my life and 30 years now that I've been a parent. And it looks like I'll be a parent for the rest of my life. for me, I'm okay with that. I'm happy to go into my retirement years. I absolutely love these two kids to death and love spending time with them. But I've got to assume for most of the people out there, when I'm 65, the last thing I want to do is still be raising kids and changing diapers and doing the things that come with a disabled child. So how do we figure it out for ourselves? Is there anything that people can do to help them say, hey, these are areas that I can use to get myself into a better position for my personality and who I am?
One thing I want to start by addressing is just that not everyone has the same opportunities or the same resources to be healthy or to have high well-being. I think it's problematic to blame individuals if they don't have high well-being. We know, and COVID has exposed this and made it worse, that distress and suffering and trauma are all too common, right? And these can really limit our potentials to be healthy and to have high well-being, both kind of at the individual level, but also collectively. I think one thing that really strikes me with when you mention you're excited to parent, you're ready to take that on, you feel prepared. And that's really important, right? That in your situation that you have recognized, I value being a parent. This is my reality of what it will be like to parent for the next 30 years. And that is not a source of distress. That's not to say, right, parenting is always a mixed bag of it doesn't feel perfect all the time, right? But on the whole, you get a lot of positive things come out of being a parent. The way I would describe that is you have the resources that you need to cope with your situation, right? And what I think we need to focus on more is understanding we all have different exposures, we have different opportunities. And if we want as many people as possible to feel good and function well and live long and healthy lives, we need to help them have the resources that they need to take on whatever stressors or situations they may encounter.
You talked about the fact that we don't all have the same background. We don't. And I think from some of the stuff that I've read and the research you guys done, it looks like if someone's educated, it appears that they have a chance of living longer, the more education you have. But how does that fall in? I mean, I assume there's an education as a CPA. I've got an education to be a CPA, but there's also a life education. CPA is not going to teach me how to eat healthy, how to exercise, how to take care of kids. It's, you know, may help me get organized enough to be able to do that stuff. If my knowledge is a CPA much different than my life knowledge. Does it really matter? Do they go together? Any thoughts on that as we look at the knowledge we should have if we're trying to continue to expand our lives and make sure we know what we need to know to do that?
Yeah, great question. Well, formal education is such an important starting point for our opportunities to be healthy and to live well for a long time. So we know that folks who have a higher formal education do live longer. There's a lot of reasons for that. So one of them is, which seems to relate to the CPA, right? The level of education that we have opens opportunities for the types of work that we can do, which is also related to the income. And so the financial and the occupational opportunities that we're going to have for the rest of our life are often directly linked with our educational attainment. You know, we saw after the recession in 2008 that a lot of the jobs that came back required a college degree, that when you look at employment after the recession, the jobs that were replaced for those, if you had a high school education or less, there just weren't those jobs added back into the labor force. So that's an important thing to pay attention to. Education does a lot of things for our health. So it helps us learn about things like health behaviors or the things that we need to do to stay healthy. There's that knowledge. It also connects us with other people who also kind of value health behaviors, who have, sometimes we call this social capital. So they have other resources and knowledge. And when you have higher education, your social network also tends to be people who have higher education. And so you can tap into those networks. And all of these things, going back to the work and income, that buys time and opportunities to do other things that are good for our health, including our health behaviors. It might make those easier when you have more time or resources.
More than 50% of CPAs will run out of money in retirement, and this number is projected to grow because of risks like inflation, increased longevity, and rising healthcare costs. Retirement Risks Advisors has the perfect solution to help CPAs make their money last as long as they do. Learn more by signing up for our flagship webinar, Getting Safely Through Retirement. In this webinar, we share the top 10 financial risks CPAs will face in retirement and what can be done to reduce or eliminate each risk. To get started, visit retirementriskadvisors.com/safe.
When you look at the studies that you've done, when we look at the psychological well-being of someone's life, are you getting numbers saying, okay, if someone's in a good psychological position, are we living 2 years longer, 4 years longer, 20 years longer? I mean, have you guys got down to that point where you can say, hey, yeah, this is this important. It could extend your life this much.
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that question. And I'd love to tell you a little bit about one particular study that came out, I guess it was about a year ago now. But in this study, we use data from what's called the Health and Retirement Study. And this is a study that represents all adults over age 50 in the United States. And in the Health and Retirement Study, older adults reported on their psychological well-being every 4 years, beginning in 2006. And we tracked these adults through May of 2019 to see who was still alive. And then what we were able to do is track associations between the well-being they had reported from 2006 to 2016 and their risk of death. What we found is that all of the aspects of psychological well-being that we looked at, so we had measures of happiness. In research, we sometimes call that positive affect, life satisfaction, the presence of positive social support. So again, that idea of you have someone who's providing close and warm social relationships, a sense of purpose in life and optimism. So all of these were associated with lower risks of death. And to put a number on it, we found that older adults who had higher psychological well-being, all of those different types, were living 5 to 8 years longer than older adults who reported low well-being. So our study was one of the first ones that were able to calculate those life expectancies. And going back to education, so that difference in life expectancy for someone who has high versus low well-being, that's about on par with someone who has a college degree, how long they might live longer than someone who has less than a high school education.
That's amazing. That's quite a difference.
These are pretty big, powerful effects. Yeah.
Yeah. When you look at it from a life expectancy standpoint, and again, from a retirement standpoint, most of us would love to live longer. Now, obviously, we've got to plan for it. And again, if we're not, maybe it's like you say, we're not living happy. We're just living. And unfortunately, we do have too many retirees that have hit that point that they've not prepared or got themselves into a mental position to be able to handle what they're doing with the retirement. Where does family genes fall into this? So one of the things as advisors we often ask, and we see other advisors often ask, it's how long did mom and dad live, grandma and grandpa? And then oftentimes we try to use that to base how long someone's going to live. Does it really have any impact at all? I mean, like my parents died very young because they got exposed to radiation from the atomic bomb testing that happened in Southern Nevada because we lived in Southern Utah at the time. In the 1950s, came over, they got exposed to that, not knowing it was going to kill them later, and never had a chance to really live out their lives from a longevity standpoint. But outside of that, if you've got a normal family that doesn't get exposed to something that would kill them early like that, does that tell you anything about how long you would live?
Certainly there are, yeah, genetic components to how long we can live. And I have to admit that is not my area of expertise. But with regards to family, the relationships we have with our parents early on, the resources that we have that our parents provide for us when we're young, those certainly do affect our levels of psychological well-being, even in midlife and old age. And so the impact of family, I think, is really important, making sure that our parents teach us how to have close social relationships, whether or not we can trust other people, how to respond when stressors or unexpected events happen. We've learned a lot of those things from our families, and those tend to shape how we approach the way we feel about ourselves and about the world throughout our entire life.
Interesting to me, I was raised in a family of six. So I've got three brothers, three sisters. I was the only one that ever went through college. So it's led to a much different life, much of what you've talked about, many more opportunities. I've been able to do a lot of things for me and my family from a health side, even that have allowed my life to be better than theirs because of it. I had a kidney transplant 3 years ago, and a lot of the situation I was in allowed me to deal with that much different than my family did, who ended up spending years on dialysis. So couldn't agree with you more as a parent seeing that. Now, I realize that every kid's different. Even when I look back at my own siblings, I've got a sister that's 2 years older than me that is happy to be a recluse. Now, I would last about 24 minutes in a reclusive situation. I want to talk to people and do different things. But you're right, as we learn those things growing up. We're coming to the end of the show, Jen. Anything else you'd like to share from your research that would help our audience better understand what they can do or opportunities out there to get themselves into better mental health?
Yeah, well, thank you again for having me and for allowing me to share my research and think about how it applies in our daily life and how we might approach retirement. I think the last thing I'd say is, I think if we all share goals of as many people as possible, feeling good and functioning well and living long and healthy lives, I think these psychological factors are really important to weigh as you're considering planning for the future. I think that sometimes we undervalue just how important our psychological well-being, how we feel and how we're relating to others, how important that is. And I would encourage folks to take it seriously.
Yeah, not going to be that good if you got millions and millions of dollars, you're thinking I'm fine financially, but I've not taken care of my body and my mental health and all those things that are going to allow me to live the life I want. Jen, thank you so much for being with us today. Listeners, if you want to learn more about getting safely through retirement, go to my website, retirementriskadvisors.com. We will have links with the podcast here where you can get access to some of our research, great information to help you just better understand what it's looking like from a psychological well-being standpoint, but also giving you some ideas and things that you can take action on to allow you to have a better retirement, which is what it's all about. We want to make sure that you not only get safely through financially, but you get safely through with your own health, your wellness, and your relationships with others. My name's Dave. I've been your host. Look forward to seeing each of you next week.
And that's today's episode. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to wherever you get your podcast. We come out with a new episode every Friday morning, and you don't want to miss it.
The Retirement Risk Show is a production of the Retirement Risk Advisors. Our show was produced by Sierra Talin and Autumn Koenig. If you're a CPA looking for more retirement education, visit retirementriskadvisors.com.